Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. My name is Magla Pillay and it is my honor to introduce today to you Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raja Yoga meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for over 40 years. Today's special subject of interest is called blindness and deafness. And no, we are not referring to those who are physically blind or physically deaf. That is not the point of the show. It's something much deeper than that. And as regards the content, I will ask Sister Denise to take that subject up further. In this series, we ask people to take a good look at themselves inside. We ask that they re-examine their conscience and their set of values, their moral code, their ethics, and ask themselves a simple question: is what you have become the person that you would like to be? Are you proud of who you are? We ask you to do an internal stock take to see whether you would like to be the same person that you are now in 20 years' time, whether you would like to raise your children in the same manner. We find that a lot of people believe that in any given situation, they wish to do the right thing. However, they do tend to act against their conscience. So to that end, I would like to warmly welcome Sister Denise to our studio today.
Thank you, Magla.
And thank you very, very much for joining us once again. Blindness and deafness. It is not how people see themselves, is it? But you're going to tell us something different, aren't you? Could you define both concepts for us?
Well, let's look at the idea of the third eye, because the blindness and deafness that we're going to be discussing today has to do with this inner eye or inner ear being totally closed and not functioning at all. And you can see something that is as clear as daylight and show it to another person and they say, no, can't see it, don't see it, can't see anything, there's no problem. And because of the perception not operating, you can't actually communicate about the idea, because the person will say, I don't see it, or I don't know what you're talking about. They don't hear. So this is why this inner eye and inner ear really needs to be opened up, and that is going to change everything about how you perceive what's going on around you.
Okay, Sister Denise, I assume that one can cure oneself of this, what would you call it, a spiritual malady, as it were. How do you go about, okay, point number one is, how do you know that you're spiritually blind and spiritually deaf? And the second question would be, how do you then start to cure it? Is it curable? Or are some people doomed to be blind and deaf for life?
I think that a good way to come to understand that I'm blind and deaf is when something that happens or something someone says gets through. It's as if there's a curtain which is just blocking it. And every so often in one's life, something happens that's so different, and you happen to be open at that time, and it just gets to you. And because it gets to you, you feel it, and then you start to see it and hear it. And even it may just be very fleeting, because these sorts of perceptions are notoriously short-lived. You will just go back to your normal way extremely quickly. So one of the things you have to do when something like that happens is really hold on to it, write it down, take a photograph of it, so that when your capacity for perception has closed down again, you've got some reference or some record. And people don't normally do that because they don't realize how short-lived it is. But when people are really trying to become a better me, you look out for new things that get to you so that you can actually make a leap forward. A person may say, well, you know, according to my criteria, I look good, and then someone with different criteria can say something, and you say, oh my God, are you for real? Is this true? Am I really not a good person? Am I a really bad person, or do I just have something slightly bad? It can really put you off kilter, and this is why the consciousness has this sort of safety device to quickly get back to what it was before, and then you lose it, which is an awkward thing because you really need that. But I suppose it's a factor of the ego that says, no matter what, I will be intact and nobody can take me out, you know. So there's an issue there with the ego.
You kind of answered my question, but I'm going to ask it anyway because I'd like a broader answer. We're very reluctant as human beings to look at our own weaknesses, aren't we? Sometimes we get message from 10 different people that you're this, and we still believe, no, everyone else is wrong and I'm this, and you won't tell me what to do. Why are we so obstinate, even though the advice may come from somebody who genuinely cares, and on some level we know that we'd be better off if we have to make the shift? Why the reluctance?
It seems to me that it's an ego defense position that immediately kicks in, you see, because the weaknesses that we have, the characteristics that people are pointing to, are our mask, you see, with which we are fused. And then if somebody says you are doing bad behavior, you'll hear it as you are a bad person, and very, very deep down you know, but this mask of ego blocks that and immediately comes dashing to the rescue of the ego and says, no, everybody's wrong, I'm right. And in fact, even this expression, I am right, in spiritual terms, is a symptom. As soon as you say, I am right, it means, oh, red flag, this is the voice of ego. So, well, you need to know about this, because if you are not educated in the whole question of spirituality, when you say, I am right, you really believe, I am right, everybody's wrong. You know, even though it's not really logical that everybody's wrong and I'm the only one who's right, but you see, ego is so big that it can even go that far.
Mm. There must be some way of getting underneath ego. And the word that comes to mind is trust. Does trust underscore ego? What would be your answer? What then can remove ego? Do you do it yourself? Does life crush it for you? Does somebody you love do it with you? What's the answer? Because it seems to be a problem, and it's a thread in a lot of your answers and the various subjects that we've covered on the show. So ego is the problem. How does one
you know, in spirituality we use some other expressions. One is body consciousness, with its opposite being soul conscious. So when the self is in the consciousness of the body, ego is very strong. The practice is to constantly move away from body consciousness, from ego, and enter into soul consciousness. But it's very subtle. And sometimes, you know, a person gets seriously humiliated. And when that happens, of course, they feel that it's really, really bad. And so when something's really bad, the ego will really bring up all possible defenses to reinforce itself. But in fortunate occasions, the humiliation can trigger a doubt that, wait a minute, maybe I'm not seeing things right. And then you will be kind of switched into something a bit more like soul consciousness, where you can look at yourself having overcome the serious difficulty of the emotion of being humiliated, to be able to glimpse, oh my goodness, this is what I did. But the thing about these moments of clarity is they're really short-lived. They're like little window, open up, see, take a look, okay, close. Mm. And if you're really wishing to be free from it, you'll take full advantage. Otherwise, the window opens up, you close your eyes, okay, nothing happened, you know. Mm. So, and it's a real problem because it's so brief. Mm. And in some of the therapeutic modalities where people are really helped through their ego issues by certain exercises which can prompt a little window opening, and they will say, no, look, you know, because it's only going to be there for 3 seconds. You have 3 seconds to really look and see. And then it also creates a big emotion of, am I really like that? And then the accompanying person has to say, it's not that you are like that, but you did that. You know, and really separating the person from the behavior is a very important aspect of the process, because if you say, this is what I am, it is too painful to bear, and then everything shuts down. This is sort of psychological self-survival mechanism. Mm. And I think that when a person starts to do spiritual practice, meditate, they're slowly gathering spiritual power, which enables them to actually see the unseeable, hear the unhearable, and take it into consideration and actually bear the pain of it. When it's unbearable, you just shut down. Mm. So it's an accumulation of spiritual strength that allows this, and you have to just go on that journey, and it takes a while.
Mm. Mr. Denise, there exists this scenario where all of us, within all of us, there are things that we do not know, that we do not know. Dark corners of the mind that have yet been to be explored. So how does one come to that level of understanding about the self? It's like, you know,
yeah,
far, far away.
As we go through life, we meet new people along the way, and I think you sometimes meet somebody who is a catalyst, and their characteristics are just the right ones that put you in a situation where you have to see something, because they become a new context for you to interact, you know, because every human being is different. And if you're just with the same old people, you'll stick within that context. But, you know, it's very good for people to go out and meet new people, because they can actually show you new things about yourself. Everyone is, in a way, a mirror for everyone else. We see ourselves very much through the eyes of other people, and sometimes you can just see something about yourself that no one else was able to show you. So this is a very good instrument.
Mm, that's actually very beautiful, that we each are mirrors for each other. Where does past pain and past trauma fit into the blindness and deafness equation, and how does it contribute towards our continued blindness and deafness?
You know, it is said for people who come back from war or come back from concentration camp or some, you know, really, really terrible situation, the characteristic is they will never speak about it. It becomes totally closed off, as if, you know, to all intents and purposes, it never happened. This is a very, very problematical situation, because it means that the trauma, which elicited a lot of negative monsters in the subconscious, is operating in a person's social interaction and contaminating it, and the person just doesn't see it. So their relationships will fall apart quickly, They will not understand how people are responding to them or reacting to them. They'll think something's wrong with everybody else. They think they're normal because they blocked off these negative experiences and consciously say, it never happened. You know, you forget it without working it through, and then you are enthralled to that thing. And so I feel that just denying all these things is not a solution. But many people believe that if you can, you know, shut it out of your consciousness, then it's not there. But that is a fallacy.
Okay, so if one finds oneself in the position where you wake up one day and think, oh my God, I've been doing this my entire life and I didn't know, okay, and I caused so many people so much of damage, how do you redress? How do you bring about, how do you redeem yourself?
In a situation like that, it creates a very, very powerful emotion, which could be, well, I'd better kill myself, you know, because you feel so bad about yourself.
It's as bad as that.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
The mythical image is the image of Sita, who has all kinds of bad things happen to her, totally unredeemable. She calls on the earth to open up and swallow her. And there are just a lot of people who just feel like that. Earth, would you please just open up and swallow me, because I cannot bear my existence at all, having seen how much damage I have caused, you see. And that's so powerful an emotion that very often a person actually will take their own life in that. And so to be able to come out of that and sort of maybe see it in perspective that, yes, okay, I have done all of this damage, but it doesn't mean that I should kill myself. Even though the feeling inside is the only possible thing to do is destroy myself, because no punishment could possibly be enough to take it away. Do you see? That's a very powerful thing. And so for a person to be able to hold that emotion and then calm it down and say, okay, I will find a way to make amends, I will change myself, I will have the patience to do the work I have to do, I will be more conscious of these things and really change my character, that is a huge piece of work, you know. And many people, they don't have the tools for it, so it's sort of more expedient to just destroy the self.
I'm glad you ended up on that note, because you bring me to my next question. What does one do to shift yourself? How do you become somebody who has spiritual sight, somebody who has spiritual hearing?
I think you need to be able to express the inexpressible.
Oh, hold on. That's big. Explain what you mean by that.
It's inexpressible because once you express it, it amplifies the pain of it enormously. So
it opens up the floodgates.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And so there is a terrible risk that if you express it, the person you express it to may express so much hatred for you or condemn you so badly that it multiplies by thousands your original intention to destroy yourself. So there's a huge risk, which is very dangerous, you know. But if you can express the inexpressible, feeling that someone or something around you or God or whatever it is can listen to it with neutral ears, and that you get a feedback that, yeah, it's okay, don't worry, we can get through this, you can be accompanied. Accompaniment is very important in these things. Then a person will get the courage, the encouragement to actually do the work. But otherwise, the person who can't express is absolutely isolated, and then the magnitude of the bad thing that the person, there is no limit to that magnitude. They're because of being alone, you can't put a size on it. You know, another person may say, oh well, that's, you know, 10 tons of badness, but it's not 20 tons or 50 tons. You know, we can manage 10 tons, we can make amends, we can deal with it. But the person will make 10 tons into 10 million tons, can't bear it, you see, and then just goes into implosion and destroys the self. Or,
that's it,
destroy everybody else.
Yeah.
One way or the other.
Okay.
But people who are concerned about their dignity, they destroy themselves. People who are just dragged by the emotion into this rage, they'll destroy everybody else. A very dangerous thing.
Okay, so what is the answer? It has to be, please end that sentence on a positive note, because
I think
I'm sitting here with nail biting.
Once it has been said that there is such a thing, then it's no longer top secret.
Okay, I need to ask you this in this context. If an experience was traumatic and the expression of the experience is also traumatic, if the experience itself didn't kill you, can the expression of the of what happened to you kill you?
Yes.
Oh, so you can die twice?
Yes.
Okay. So, okay, give us some good news.
Well, I think the good
news, isn't there?
I think the good news is these things are now, you know, the cat's out of the bag. There is such a thing, which means instead of it being taboo, these are really taboo subjects. You know, once it's talked about, it suddenly becomes all right, because you're not the only one who's that bad. You know, there are other people and it's not considered that bad, and you see that it is manageable. But in the intimacy and privacy of your own perception, in isolation from any feedback, you can't put a limit to the size of how bad it is. And that is what puts you into such a bad situation.
Mm. Yeah. Well,
and that's why it's taboo.
Yeah, I can see that. Okay, so Sister Denise, somebody is now on a very determined path to put right his own weaknesses. In other words, he's willing to hear about his dark side because he wants to change and become a better person. He's willing to see his own weaknesses and wants to become a better person. How does one invite God to help you in that journey?
Many people in that situation, they have, you know, you give up everything, and the last resort is to turn to God and say, you know, help me, God, with deep sincerity and no holds barred. Then invariably the experience of God's presence, God's help, God's light comes, and this is the only thing that can help a person out of it. And this is the beauty of God, which no human being can do.
And how does he help? What does he do? How does he give the return of one's quest?
It's a flood of, I love you, I'm with you, I have the energy that's needed. It's just a whole series of messages in one little package of a wave of positive energy that makes a person move from abject despair to hope and courage. And this is out of the range of human behavior. It's really the soul and the supreme soul, and the rest of humanity is on some different level. And this is the thing. And there are so many instances of how people have shifted through that direct encounter with God in moments of deep anguish, agony, and despair.
Mm. Okay, so your message is then that there is hope.
Yes.
One can begin to hear, one can begin to see, one can become whole again. Okay. Well, very deep and powerful message, Sister Denise. I hope those of you at home listened carefully to today's message, because it's not something that we'd like to think about. We all have aspects of our personality that we don't know, and more specifically, we don't know that we don't know. We all receive positive feedback from friends and family, and we don't listen to them for some reason or the other. There are certain weaknesses that we have that we refuse to see. There are certain messages that we gain that we refuse to hear. So Sister Denise has taken us through a beautiful and enlightening half hour where she speaks about how the ego affects this, and it's the fault of the ego within every individual that causes this to be the case. She has shared that beneath the ego there's pain, ego being the veneer, that there's pain underneath. And she also spoke about having to face one's pain, and thereby bring about healing, and in your healing process to include God in that, and that which you gain from him would be your ultimate healing. A very, very beautiful message. And if this is something that's within your life, that's within your heart, and you feel that something, that this is something you would need to embrace, we invite you to do so today. It's not something that you can postpone. And what I liked about what Sister Denise shared is that this work cannot be delegated. It's self-work. Okay, that was a very profound message for me. So those of you at home listening to today's show, I hope that you took benefit, and I hope there's some lights that went up into in your mind as far as the subject is concerned. So thank you so very much for your depth and your wisdom. And Sister Denise, we hope to see you again soon. And those of you at home, we hope that you join us for our next episode on values, virtues, ethics, and morality. Thank you, and goodbye.